Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. Always great catching up with all of you at the end of a week, especially now fall is upon us. We're about to change the clock, certainly telling us that the days are getting shorter, the temperatures are getting a bit colder, and a lot of crazy stuff seems to be playing out in Washington with Congress, with this administration. You know, there's a Chinese curse that says, may you live in interesting times, and indeed, I hope these times don't get more interesting. I think we've had enough of interesting. For those of you not familiar with me, I'm a retired senior special agent with what used to be the Immigration and Naturalization Service, and after the attacks of 9/11, which unfortunately here in New York, we saw all too up close and all too in person. My neighbors were killed. The ashes from Ground Zero actually landed on me, my family, my house, and my neighbors. And we in New York cannot get those images and those experiences out of our mind. Incredibly, you watch Washington, you listen to the president, you listen to alleged leaders in Washington, and you wouldn't even believe that 9/11 happened in this century. It seems as though they could sooner recall what happened in Pearl Harbor in 1941 than we could remember what happened in 2001 here inside the United States of America. And I think it's an apt analogy because both at Pearl Harbor and on 9/11 we lost 3,000 people, and in fact, since 9/11, many more people have died because of their exposure to the toxins that were spewed into the environment at Ground Zero. So we really need to hold our politicians accountable. Sadly, not enough Americans are. I certainly am appreciative of the fact that you're listening, and I hope that you take the information that I provide on this program to you and act on it. And the way that I want you to act on it is to be in touch with your elected representatives on all levels of government, not just Washington, city, state, doesn't matter. Make the politicians understand that we are not as stupid as they wish we were, because you have to be pretty dopey to not understand that if you can't secure the borders of the United States, and if you have no control over who enters and remains in your country, then you are setting yourself up for more terrorist attacks and for more problems. This is not about xenophobia. This is not about being opposed to immigration. We legally admit more than a million lawful immigrants into the United States each and every year. That's more than the rest of the world combined. We naturalize well over a half million new citizens each and every year. Again, more than the rest of the world combined. This is not about being opposed to legal immigration, but it's about making certain that the immigration laws do what they were intended to do when they were enacted originally, and that is simply to protect innocent lives and the jobs of American workers. That's why we have immigration laws. That's why we have borders. And the same thing holds true for each and every country on this planet. And if you study history, you will find that most borders that separate countries were decided upon, were determined by conflict, by war, by the loss of life. So to be so cavalier as to suggest that borders don't matter are the height of stupidity or the height of corruption, or perhaps both. For those of you that want to read a little bit more about me, about what I've been doing, you can please go to my website. It's michaelcutler.net, one word, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. I'm also very proud to be a senior fellow with a wonderful organization out on the West Coast, Californians for Population Stabilization, located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California, as they like to remind me, especially when it turns wintry here in New York and they enjoy the balmy, warm temperatures that go with living in Southern California along the Pacific Coast. Great organization. Their website, capsweb.org. I've been out there a number of times. Great folks, great friends. And people dedicated to the same mission that I am, to provide information that unfortunately all too often is not being provided by alleged journalists in the mainstream media. The president gives speech after speech about immigration. People come on television very often. You see talk show hosts, no background in immigration, but they come on and they talk about immigration. Well, they may as well go on and talk about neurosurgery for all the difference that it makes. If you don't have a background in a subject, how in the world are you providing information that the public can use? I am adamant that, as my dad, may he rest in peace, used to admonish me when I was a young man, if I started to get a little bit full of myself, as kids can do, he would give me that father look, and I think we've all seen it, and he would very quietly and very pointedly stare me right in the eye and say, Mike, empty barrels make a lot of noise. The point that he made is that if you don't have knowledge, you don't have experience, and you can't quote a credible source, then maybe you shouldn't be out there making statements. Immigration is a vital issue. It's not a single issue, but as I often like to write in my commentaries, it most certainly is a singular issue because it impacts just about every challenge and threat we face. It challenges national security. It challenges criminal justice and public safety. We currently have huge numbers of criminal aliens operating in the United States, involved with the narcotics trade, involved with violent gangs, and that's not to say that anybody who comes here is a criminal. I want to be real careful about this. We have many wonderful people who have come to the United States and have contributed greatly to this nation. We are indeed a nation of immigrants. My mother was an immigrant. My dad's parents were immigrants. Some people who have been very close to me are immigrants, or their parents were. But it's about making a distinction. And the distinction is that the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. We all love to have company stop by and visit, maybe play a game of chess or have a conversation or share a cup of coffee or have dinner with us, but not when they climb through our bedroom window at 3 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, instinctively, if, God forbid, you came home and found somebody sitting in your living room watching your television, sipping some of your soda, you would instinctively say to them, what in the world are you doing here? And the problem with those folks who run our borders is that we don't know. We don't know their true identities. We don't know what propelled them across our borders. We don't know why they're here. And we keep hearing this story, well, they're all here to do the work Americans don't want to do. Hard to believe in an era where so many Americans are unemployed and underemployed, where hourly wages are plummeting, by the way, directly traceable back to immigration. In fact, what most people don't know is that prior to the Second World War, the immigration laws were enforced and administered by the Labor Department, because the understanding was that we needed to shield American workers from unfair foreign competition. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how we built up our middle class. The middle class is a direct result of effective immigration law enforcement. If you open up the doors to every worker in the world and you flood the labor market with cheap labor, then wages will plummet. And that, I will tell you, is what this is all about. This is all about cheap labor, and not just cheap labor in terms of illegal aliens coming here from Latin America and other countries where the folks are exploited, treated like worse than livestock in many cases. And then the cost of that labor drops through the floorboards because American workers who would expect a living wage to go to work in the morning will suddenly find that they are competing with people who will settle for next to nothing. In fact, if you look at the meat processing industry, 15 years ago, people were earning $18 an hour. Today, they are earning under $10 per hour. Well, now think about that. The wages have been cut roughly in half, and that's before you adjust for inflation. So realize the damage this does, but not just at those bottom rung jobs, and I'm going to get to that in a moment, but I just want you to understand that my position is not one of saying that anybody who comes here from someplace else is evil or bad or they shouldn't be here. What I'm saying is that you are not antisocial if you look through your peephole before you open your door when a stranger knocks on your door. And in fact, this idea about having to knock on a door before gaining entry into an apartment or a house is universal across the world. And I can prove it. Because they tell knock-knock jokes in just about every country, in just about every language. Because people understand that you don't barge into somebody's dwelling without getting the permission of the person who lives there. Mayor Bloomberg here in New York, thank God his term is about to expire, but depending on who replaces him, gives me cause for pause. But Bloomberg has all talked about the fact that they don't prosecute people who trespass into public housing projects in New York, and I agree that that's a threat and a problem, but then comes the disconnect. He doesn't, on the other hand, say a word about people who trespass on America. In fact, Bloomberg, apparently, is just fine with people trespassing on America because he's made it clear that he has no desire to have the NYPD work cooperatively with ICE to enforce the immigration laws. And by the way, the same thing is true of Mr. Giuliani, America's mayor. This has been going on for far too long because politicians from both sides of the aisle have seen in this massive influx of foreign workers profit. And that's where we are today. Now, I want to dispel a myth. Most of the people who talk about immigration and talk about comprehensive immigration reform talk about how this is a massive amnesty program. And that is certainly a major component. Don't misunderstand me. A major component of comprehensive immigration reform is an amnesty program for what we're being told is 11 million illegal aliens. I'm willing to bet dinner. You know, go out there and make that bet with me, whoever you are listening. I'm willing to bet that if we did do this legislative betrayal, and that's exactly what it would be, that we would wind up with perhaps 25, 30, 35 million, certainly many more than 11 million. And if you wonder why I say this, history is on my side. In 1986, when the first amnesty was enacted, I was an agent. I was working for the INS in New York City. We were told by the folks from headquarters to expect that a million point two, a million point three, maybe we'd get as high as 1.5 million illegal aliens would be covered under the program, expect it to happen. Well, guess what, folks? By the time the bureaucratic dust had settled, between 3.5 and 4 million aliens availed themselves the opportunity to emerge from those poetic shadows. What shadows? I'd love to know, with all the demonstrations that we're seeing around the country staged by illegal aliens who fearlessly parade themselves before the cameras, waving signs and demanding their rights. So I don't think they're hiding in the shadows at all. It's American workers who are living in the shadows trying to support themselves under increasingly adverse conditions. But we were told 1 to 1.5 million. We got almost 4 million. Today we're being told 11 million. You do the math. But there's a lot more. And by the way, the fact that we would wind up giving all those people identity documents gives me cause for pause. I know there are some Republicans out there, and if you're listening, you know that it's not all Republicans. We have some real good guys on the Hill, some people that I'm very proud to consider my friend. Congressman Lou Barletta is certainly out there doing a great job. I was honored, thrilled to join him at Daytona Beach, Florida at Embry-Riddle University a couple of weeks ago. I think we were there beginning of September. We did an event on the campus that was covered by C-SPAN. If you go to my website, michaelcutler.net, if you go to capsweb.org, you can watch the event. It was an enjoyable conversation with Lou, with Mark Bernier, the host of WNDB, a local station down in Florida. Great to join Mark, I've been on his radio show many times as a guest. He made this all possible. But, you know, Lou Barletta was there, and we got into the issues. But there are some other members of the Republican Party. This is, and by the way, this isn't a Democrat or Republican issue. Immigration is an American issue. Are saying, well, we certainly don't want to give citizenship to illegal aliens, but we want to let them work here. What they are missing from the equation and the conversation, boys and girls, is that if we were to give those folks identity documents without being able to verify their identities, then we would be undermining national security, which is why I have come to refer to comprehensive immigration reform by a slightly different name. I call it the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. In fact, I referred to it back in 2007 when they tried the same kind of foolishness. Senator Jeff Sessions, another great leader in Washington, actually quoted me from the floor of the Senate on three separate days during the hotly debated, the highly contested debates on comprehensive reform, because this idea about giving illegal aliens identity documents without being able to verify their identities is really creating a masquerade ball, and the 9/11 Commission warned us about it. They talked about how immigration fraud and identity fraud, people using false ID, was what was used by the terrorists not only to enter the United States but embed themselves in the United States. And then I listened to members of Congress saying, well, we're going to be tough. We won't give them citizenship. They don't care about citizenship. They want an identity document and a false name so they can get a Social Security card and a driver's license and travel freely around the country, have access to airplanes, have access to government and private office buildings, and have access to jobs that, even if they don't involve national security, involve critical infrastructure. I'm talking about places like food processing plants. Think of how many times people have been sickened because some plant has a problem with hygiene. You know, they're too cheap to give the workers soap or whatever. Well, imagine terrorists working at a food processing plant who go there with the intention of poisoning people. This idea that we're going to give people identity documents without so much as a face-to-face interview is a suicide pact, period. I make no bones about this. Oh, and by the way, if you wonder what I'm talking about, no interview, these deferred action cases that this Obama administration created without the benefit of legislation, he essentially enacted the DREAM Act. We don't need no stinking laws. We have a president who issues the executive orders. Well, under the auspices of deferred action childhood arrival, and we don't even know if they're childhood arrivals because no one is being interviewed in person, and nobody is going out to conduct field investigations, and the president of the union that represents those beleaguered adjudicators at United States Citizenship and Immigration Services have gone public, and they said, look, our adjudications officers are being required to process a minimum of 12 petitions per day. Now, you should know that it just takes minutes to approve an application, but it can take hours or days to deny an application. And according to statements and according to prepared testimony by the officials of the union, because thank God we have unions that represent federal civil servants, they're able to speak to the media without fear of being fired, they said that it's almost impossible to deny an application, can't then meet your quota. And in fact, twice in the past, a good friend, former colleague, Jerry Casale, joined me on my program. Jerry and I began our careers as inspectors at Kennedy International Airport here in New York City. He ultimately became an adjudications officer at headquarters in Washington. And he verified what I'm telling you. And you can go back and look at the archives and see Jerry's interview. And he made the same point. It takes about 30 minutes to approve an application, hours or days to deny one. If you're told you have to process 12 a day, it's virtually impossible to deny any applications and meet the quota that was established for you. But of course, if some terrorist games the system, then the bosses will go back and say, well, we told our people that fraud was a matter of national security and you better be on the lookout for it. Lots of luck trying to deny an application and meet your quota. And in fact, newspaper accounts said that the approval rate initially was 99.5%. I think it's down to about 95%. No interviews, no field investigations. How in the world does that protect national security? This is absolutely insane. But let me go beyond that. While comprehensive reform would include this massive amnesty program that would undermine national security and hammer the wages of many Americans, especially Americans who were working in the low-end economic jobs, there's something else contained in comprehensive reform that almost nobody talks about, so I'm going to talk about it. Because on this program, my goal is to provide you, the listeners, with the information you're not going to hear on the major networks. Let me tell you what we're going to tell you about. It's the H-1 visa program. H-1B visas, in case you don't know, are visas that are given to exceptional workers who have specialized skills. Generally, we are talking here about computer programmers, engineers, technicians, people with advanced degrees very often, and people who up until recently were middle class. The middle class is going the way of the dodo bird, if you haven't noticed. They will be preparing an exhibit at the Museum of Natural History before too long, and they will put the middle class on display next to Neanderthals and the dodo bird. I think they're making room between those two sections at the museum even as we speak. Because H-1B visa holders are replacing American workers in industry as we speak. A couple of years ago, Dan Rather did an amazing story. It was a Dan Rather Reports on HDNet Television. It's a cable network. Dan, of course, had been the anchor at CBS News for years. A very liberal guy. And again, this isn't a liberal or conservative issue, but an American issue. And Dan Rather spent a whole hour on a segment that was referred to as No Thanks for Everything. Just amazing. It was about computer programmers who had lost their jobs, replaced by people from India. What you may not know is that right now we send more remittances to India than Mexico, or at least the workers that come here do. They're not illegal aliens, but they are foreign workers, and their goal is to send money back home, and I don't blame them. Look, if I could go to Canada and make four times what I was earning in the United States, I suspect I would go to Canada and send money back to my family in the United States. And that's exactly what's happening. And when the United States told India and other people, hey, you know what? We're trying to spend money on securing the border. Again, that's that kabuki theater nonsense. We'll secure 90% of the border. We'll leave 10% open. Well, you know, it's like a school crossing guard. If you know where the gaps are, that's where you go. I mean, it's all a game. And we're being played for stupid by probably 95% of the imbeciles in Washington. And you know, they're right. I mean, we reelected this administration. We are allowing this to take place. I participated in a demonstration July 15th sponsored by the Black American Leadership Alliance, D.C. March for Jobs. We had about 4,000 people come down to Washington to protest. We should have filled D.C. with a 500,000 or 1 million Americans screaming angry that we're losing our jobs and our future, not only for ourselves but for our children. But it was barely a hiccup for most people. We're too busy sitting home watching television and waiting for the next iPhone to come out. We need to be involved, folks. Democracy is not a spectator sport. But in any event, Dan Rather covered the story of people who had worked. One young lady who started out on the program, MBA in computer science, graduated Phi Beta Kappa, worked for Microsoft, came to work one day, and they said, oh, by the way, today's your last day. Here's your severance pay. Clean out your office. You don't have to stay to the end of the day. You can go home now. No warning. Walked in. Go home. She was replaced by somebody from India. This is a woman who had a 401k, had savings, had a house. Lost her house, lost her 401k, lost her life savings. Her future's gone. Her future is in her rearview mirror, thanks to the H-1B visa program. Comprehensive immigration reform, ladies and gentlemen, would triple the number of H-1B visas. Oh, and by the way, that's just the tip of the iceberg. Because for the first time, catch this, you can't make it up. The Senate bill that Chuck Schumer, our friend Chuck, who is so eager to screw over the middle class, made sure that in addition to everything else, thank you, Chuck, for the knife in the back you're giving all hardworking American high-tech workers, H-1B visa holders would find that their spouses would have legal authority to work in the United States on any job whatsoever that they qualify for. They would be handed a document known as an EAD, Employment Authorization Document. You've heard all this talk about the mandatory E-Verify, how important it would be. That EAD document puts you in the club. You walk right through that mandatory E-Verify program, the way a knife goes through butter, you're in. That is your key. Click, it opens the lock. With an EAD card, you could work anywhere. You could be a doctor in a hospital. You could be an usher in a movie theater, should they still have those things. You could be changing oil on the car. You could become a school teacher. You could be a school crossing guard. Whatever. Doesn't matter. An EAD card says you have as much right to a job as an unemployed American. And for the first time, we would have the spouses of those threefold increase H-1B visa holders, their husbands and wives would now be able to work in the United States. So now we're talking about six times as many people working in the United States, but we're not done. The hits keep on coming thanks to those senators who voted for S-744, because under that bill, children, how's that for an oxymoron, adult children, the adult children of H-1B visa holders would also get an EAD card. So if some guy comes here from India, let's say, because they send us the bulk, if they have three or four children who are aged 22 to 30, they could all come to America on H-4 visas, and they could get employment authorization documents and take any job their little old hearts desire. No limit. You have five kids? Come on down. They can all work here, and they're legal, and they pass E-Verify. That's what's in S-744. See, when people keep saying this is about amnesty, it's not. Amnesty is a big part of it. It would undermine national security, and I will tell you in my judgment, irreparably, won't be fixed. We will suffer the consequence for I don't know how many years, but it would mean that we would be flooding the labor market with three times as many high-tech visa holders. The kids that went to college that have run up the student loans that they can't pay off because that loan looks like a mortgage, guess what? Competition's coming. Coming here under the auspices of comprehensive reform, along with the spouses and along with the adult children of the people granted those high-tech visas to come work in the United States. This is open season on Americans who want to work and support themselves. Now, if I sound angry, I am beyond rage. You should be beyond rage. I listened to the president come to Brooklyn today, my hometown, land in Prospect Park, where I used to go with my parents to see the animals in the zoo and row on the lake. Beautiful park in the middle of Brooklyn. They landed Marine One there. He went to P-TECH, which is a school in Brooklyn, and he told the kids, we are living in a global economy, and you need to get a good education so you can compete, because you're going to be competing with everybody from everywhere, whether they're from Russia, whether they're from India, and he's right. He's absolutely right. He actually told the truth this time. And he said, you're going to be competing with those people, and S-744 will bring them by the plane load, an endless stream of workers coming to America. And you know how it works, supply and demand. If you flood the market with workers, you drive down the price of the labor. This is exactly why we had immigration laws back before the Second World War, to build a middle class, to make certain that we didn't do this. This is the undoing of America's middle class being waved on by the cheerleader-in-chief himself, Obama. Waved on by Chuck Schumer, waved on by Nancy Pelosi, waved on by those people who are calling for more H-1B visas. We've heard them say it. We need America to be competitive, so we need to staple green cards onto the diplomas of foreign students. Why in the world are we educating foreign students in the United States of America, ladies and gentlemen, when Americans can't support themselves and are out of work? Why aren't we trying to educate American kids and see to it that Americans get first shot? If you did this with your children, they'd probably take your kids away and say you were lousy parents. Parents take care of their kids before they take care of charity. A country is supposed to take care of its citizens before it takes care of anybody else. And you should know, and I'm working on a piece right now for Accuracy in Media, and they've published other of my stories. I am working on a piece for them because we are looking at this outrage. We are looking at the fact that Zuckerberg and Gates and all these other people in the high-tech industries are pushing hard for comprehensive immigration reform because they know they would have basically a limitless supply of foreign computer programmers and computer techs and engineers and scientists, and then there's no reason to hire any Americans because Americans, gosh, they're going to expect a 401k program. Americans are going to have health care insurance. Americans are going to expect certain benefits. People from India don't. They will work for substandard wages under conditions that don't have any of those perks, benefits, or fringe benefits. And guess what? They could pocket more money. That's what this is about. And in fact, if you go to the UN's websites, you will find out that in the last year, 2012, something on the order of $400 billion in remittances flowed from the first world to the third world. Now, what's remarkable, I couldn't find it anywhere because in years past, they would tell you where the money came from. Now they don't. It's just the first world. But I can tell you that 3, 4, 5 years ago, consistently, the United States accounted for half of the remittances that flowed from the first world to the third world. Half. So that means that if $400 billion-plus went to the third world, then $200 billion, with a B, came out of the U.S. economy. $200 billion. Now, I want you to stop and think about it. I'm not an economist. I don't even play one on TV. But I remember my days of studying economics back in high school and college, and they talked about something known as the multiplier effect. And what the multiplier effect is, was that if you earn a dollar, you go out and buy something with it. You know, the guy that sells the car takes that money that he gets from selling the car, and he buys a pair of shoes. The guy who sells the pair of shoes buys a refrigerator. The guy who sold him the refrigerator takes a trip to Disney World, and so the money circulates through the economy and generates more business, more commerce, and that's called the multiplier effect. Years ago, they said it was a 1-to-5 ratio. I don't know what it is today, but I'm sure it can't be much off that. If it's a 1-to-5 ratio, the $200 billion being drained right out of the economy so that there is no multiplier effect is the equivalent of taking $1 trillion out of our economy at a time when we're running up a $16, $17 trillion deficit. Can we afford to lose $1 trillion in commerce? See, the people that go on TV say, well, the sooner we pass comprehensive immigration reform, the sooner it will help our economy. When was the last time you ever heard a talking head look one of these characters in the eye and say, okay, how? Explain it to me. How? How is it that if we give more foreign nationals who look to send money home, if we bring more of them in and displace American workers and drive down wages and displace Americans so that instead of being part of the middle class where they're taxpayers, they become people living on the safety net programs, how will that help our economy? Have you ever heard anybody on television have the chutzpah, the integrity, the insight to ask that question? Not a relevant question. How? You know, I love the Science Channel because the Science Channel has a two-word slogan, and I love it. Question everything. You know, they jokingly say that a Jew answers a question with another question. I'm Jewish, so maybe I'm predisposed to asking questions. It's kind of in my DNA, I guess. But it should be in every American's DNA. All of us need to ask questions. Don't take at face value what you're being told, because most of it is rubbish. Most of it is propaganda. Most of it is designed to be misleading because there is an agenda in play. And I, ladies and gentlemen, can prove it. Alan Greenspan, and I've talked about this before, but Alan Greenspan has in the past went before Chuck Schumer's Immigration Subcommittee. And what's so amazing was that Greenspan was so clear on what he wanted. And it's just absolutely amazing. And I'm going to read this to you. Because on April 30th, 2009, Chuck Schumer, our friend, the man behind comprehensive immigration reform, the man behind S-744, the man who wants to triple H-1B visas so that we have more competition for Americans who can't hold on to a job today, the man who wants to bring in the spouses of H-1B visa holders and give them jobs in America, and wants to give the adult children of those people jobs in America, that Chuck Schumer, the guy who used to be my congressman but apparently was never my representative, that Chuck Schumer, as chairman of the Immigration Subcommittee of the Senate, called on Alan Greenspan to testify at a hearing, and the title of the hearing was Comprehensive Immigration Reform in 2009, Can We Do It and How? I wrote a commentary way back, and I said that reminded me, apocryphal law firm, do we cheat them and how? Can we achieve it and how? Wow, I got to tell you. And this was 2009. So here is what Greenspan had to say about comprehensive reform. First, skilled workers. We're talking now about skilled foreign workers, by the way. This is about skilled foreign workers. First, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will of necessity move into vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. Those vacant housing units, boys and girls, weren't dropped here from a flying saucer. These were the houses that American families lost to foreclosure because of Greenspan's economic policies. Fox News did a report and laid the blame for a big chunk of the economic meltdown on Greenspan and his policy of providing subprime mortgages, in many instances, to illegal aliens. And by the way, if they were here illegally, there was no way of verifying their credit backgrounds. Think about that. So let me read this again. First, skilled workers and their families form new households. They will of necessity move into vacant housing units, the current glut of which is depressing prices of American homes. And of course, house price declines are a major factor in mortgage foreclosures and in the plunge of the value of a vast quantity of U.S. mortgage-backed securities that has contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. So let's go back and look at what he's saying. If we could get lots of foreign workers to come here, I guess tripling the H-1B visas would serve nicely, because these are people making more than minimum wage, then they would move into those houses and drive up the price of houses. They would move into the houses. Now, if you have Americans who've lost their homes to foreclosure, and you are now bringing in foreigners to live in those homes and drive up the price of a house, what hope does any average American family ever have of buying a house now that we've driven the price up? This is about pricing Americans out of the housing market. Forget about the American dream for Americans. Oh, and by the way, the DREAM Act, you got to love it. The other side gets so torqued when you use the word alien. Oh, my God, it's a pejorative. You can't say it. It's a terrible word. It's the N-word. Alien just means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. It's not that it's a pejorative, folks. It's that it provides clarity. But do you know what the A in DREAM Act is? You got it. Alien. Suddenly, to conjure up the image of the American dream, the word alien becomes palatable to the open borders crowd, the folks I call the immigration anarchists, because it just sounds so cozy and warm and fuzzy. The DREAM Act. Huh, the American dream for illegal aliens, but Americans apparently need not apply because Mr. Greenspan has it figured out. We will flood America with foreign workers who will buy the houses, drive up the price of the houses, the banking system will make tons of money, and Americans once again will get screwed. Lots of luck, America. So he goes on and talks about how this will the U.S. Mortgage-backed securities contributed substantially to the disabling of our banking system. So we know that that's item number one, is to drive up the value of houses so that the banks will make more money. Got to love it. By the way, banks, Harry Truman got it right. President Truman said, bankers are nobody's friends. They will lend you money only after you could prove that you didn't need it in the first place. Got to love bankers. By the way, three-card Monty is not a product. You go to the bank, they tell you about the products they own, they create. In my world, a product requires an assembly line with glue and metal and wood and steel and something you can hold in your hand. Three-card Monty is not a product, except when you walk into a bank. Suddenly, three-card Monty becomes a product. I really love those people. And then he says, and this is what you really need to listen to, folks. The second bonus, now this is about opening up immigration quotas. The second bonus would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of skilled over lesser skilled. Are you getting this? Let me read it again. The second bonus of flooding the market with foreign high-tech workers. The second bonus would address the increasing concentration of income in this country. Greatly expanding our quotas for the highly skilled would lower wage premiums of skilled over lesser skilled. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Remember what I said the original purpose of immigration laws were? To make certain that American workers have a job opportunity here in America. Greenspan, we got to change that. We got to change that. And that's exactly what Chuck Schumer's S-744 does. It changes the immigration law so that American workers will not be protected any longer from foreign competition. We want foreign competition. Well, they do. I don't. Not this kind of competition. It's unfair. It would destroy the middle class, period. That's what's in their sights. You will either be very rich or very poor. No in between here. And what made America, America, what made the American dream, folks, as we all know, was this middle class. We developed the biggest, most vibrant, most upwardly mobile middle class in the world. And by the way, there are countries in Europe today that have a much bigger middle class and a more upwardly mobile middle class, and S-744 would finish it off. That would be the nail in the coffin, the last nail in the coffin, because, again, let me read this. Skill shortages in America exist because we are shielding our skilled labor force from world competition. Quotas have been substituted for the wage pricing mechanism, and in the process, we have created a privileged elite, whose incomes are being supported at non-competitively high levels by immigration quotas on skilled professionals. Eliminating such restrictions would reduce at least some of our income inequality. Remarkable language. Inequality, folks, is absolutely wrong if it's about race, if it's about religion, if it's about ethnicity, if it's about gender, if it's about age. Equal work, equal pay. That kind of equality, I think we as Americans all agree with. No one should be looking at skin color or gender or anything else. You do the same work, you have the same qualifications, you get the same paycheck. That's the kind of equality we all agree with. So he used artful language and said that eliminating quotas, in other words, opening the door to gazillions of foreign workers, because, again, he referred to Americans with skills as the privileged elite earning this wage premium. When you're sitting there this cold winter trying to figure out how you're going to pay your home heating bill, unless you're making minimum wage, Alan Greenspan has a name for you, and you should, you know, just be excited, because he calls you the privileged elite if you're not making minimum wage, the privileged elite. And he said that his goal is to reduce at least some of our income inequality, not based on race, religion, gender, ethnicity. No, income inequality based on skill. Folks, think about it. The American dream was get the education, acquire a trade, get a skill, you make more money. The guy with the PhD makes more than the guy with the master's degree. The guy with the master's degree makes more than the guy with the bachelor's degree. And the guy with the bachelor's degree generally makes more than the guy that dropped out of high school. Alan Greenspan is looking at that whole thing and saying, no. I don't care whether you have a PhD or you dropped out of public school. We're going to see to it that we minimize, shrink down, all but eliminate any difference in wage based on your education or skill. And we're going to do it by opening up immigration quotas. Chuck Schumer listened to Alan Greenspan. He didn't invite him there by accident. I myself have testified before. I think I'm up to 16 congressional hearings. You don't get invited by accident. You don't stumble in or out of the street and have a seat at the table. Greenspan was there to deliver a message. The message is the middle class needs to go. We need to get rid of the money that is concentrated in that sector. And he said it. He said it point blank. He talked about how there's too much money in the sector, and the sector of the skilled American worker. And that's what you're not hearing about on just about any television program. That's not what you're hearing about on most radio programs, except this one and those programs where they're willing to let me come on and talk about it. How in the world are Americans sitting at home and playing Xbox or whatever, or Wii, and not worried about how this will affect them or their children or their future? There's another study that says that most Americans now believe they will be working through their 80th birthday because they don't believe they will ever be able to retire. Is that the American dream, folks? Do you understand what is going on? I hope you do. Please understand the point. And in fact, I want you to know something else that Greenspan said. Let me read this. This is also from his testimony. The quantity of temporary H-1B visas issued each year is far too small to meet the need, especially in the near future, as the economy copes with the forthcoming retirement wave of skilled baby boomers. Who's retiring? Do you think they're retiring? On what? Bupkis? So he says this, the quantity of temporary H-1B visas issued each year is far too small to meet the need, especially in the near future, as the economy copes with the forthcoming retirement wave of skilled baby boomers. I wish Greenspan would retire permanently. As Bill Gates, the chairman of Microsoft, succinctly testified before Congress in March 2007, quote, America will find it infinitely more difficult to maintain its technological leadership if it shuts out the very people who are most able to help us compete. And he added that we are driving away the world's best and brightest, precisely when we need them the most. Best and brightest, obviously not Americans. Obviously not Americans. And, you know, maybe Gates is right, because if Americans are sitting home and ignoring this clear and present threat to the viability of America's middle class, then just maybe Gates has something here. How in the world do you sit home and ignore what the richest man in the world is telling Congress, that the best and brightest are not Americans, but people from third world countries? And why are they best and brightest? The only thing exceptional about those workers is that they will work for exceptionally low wages. That's what this is about. And in fact, what Mr. Gates is doing is moving into Africa, and I think they want to be able to get Africa up and running so they can become a big market for the computers and the software and all of this technological stuff, because America is saturated. How many computers do you need? How many iPhones do you need? They're starting programs now where after you own an iPhone, I think it's for 6 months, you can trade it in. Because nobody cares. If you have an iPhone, if you can access the internet, and you have a GPS, and you have some of those other neat programs, what's the big deal with getting the next iPhone that comes out? It's a different color. The screen is an eighth of an inch bigger. It's a quarter of a micron, whatever. It's a phone. It works. So I think what's really happening is that all these tech giants are saying, you know, we have saturated America. People don't care anymore about the next generation computer. But if we could go to the third world and we could build up their infrastructure, then they will start buying our stuff. And that's what we're seeing. This money flowing from America is flowing into the third world. I think that the idea is to loot America so that the third world builds itself up at literally and figuratively at our expense. This is about profitability of the companies that are driving this train. And there's now a pending bit of legislation, or there's a lawsuit about pending legislation, that would allow unlimited campaign contributions to candidates. Unlimited. I mean, look, we really need, at the rate we're going, an official government auctioneer. Maybe they can get the guy from the Mecum Auto Auction to auction off America. But there's another story that I want to get to today, and this goes going back to the idea of the amnesty. I think I've shown you at least one example of where comprehensive reform is about more than amnesty. And by the way, it also has provisions to allow an alien, for example, who creates fake documents to get away with it three times before we start talking about deportation. Forget about doing it once. You get three shots. I mean, I don't understand any of this. If you're producing phony documents, then you're a threat to national security, you're a threat to community safety. And so there are so many things about comprehensive reform that make it easier for aliens to stay here, easier for aliens to be admitted here, but there is absolutely nothing, zippo, nada, nothing in comprehensive reform that talks about enforcing the laws. So even if aliens ignore the law under comprehensive reform, it's okay. We don't care. No big deal. You want to violate the law? No biggie. Have at it. Absolutely astonishing. And, you know, you have members of Congress, by the way, McCaskill's a great example, Claire McCaskill. They never got back to me. I called her office, and some young lady got on the phone. And the reason I called Claire McCaskill's office was because she was quoted in the papers as being righteously indignant. And guess what she was indignant about? She was indignant that Snowden got a security clearance. She was indignant that the Navy Yard shooter got a security clearance. What kind of background checks are they doing? So I called up McCaskill's office. A woman gets on the phone and says, can I help you? And I told her who I was. I said, I want to speak to the person who handles immigration. And she said, why? That's kind of unusual. Usually, the person that answers the phone says, sure, let me go see if Tom Smith is there or whoever the guy is. In this case, I got a third degree from this young lady. Now, maybe for all I know, she was the woman in charge of immigration for the senator. I have no idea who she was. She never really gave me her name. And I said, you know, if Senator McCaskill is so worried about the way we do security investigations for people like Snowden and this guy at the Navy Yard, then I'd like to know why she favors comprehensive immigration reform and the DREAM Act, because we're not even interviewing these people, but we're giving them identity documents, and this violates what the 9/11 Commission warned us about. She assured me she would have somebody from their immigration team get back to me. They have a whole immigration team at McCaskill's office, apparently. She wouldn't tell me who the captain of the team was, though. God help us. This disconnect, whether it's Bloomberg talking about the need to prosecute people who trespass in public housing but give the key to the city to those who trespass on America, Claire McCaskill jumping up and down about background checks for Snowden and the shooter at the Navy Yard, but ignoring the fact that we're giving people identity documents without even an interview and with nobody knocking on anybody's door? Do you see a disconnect? What in the world is passing for government representing the best interests of the American people? Abraham Lincoln in the Gettysburg Address talked about a government by the people, of the people, and for the people. Really? In this day and age, do you think it is? I don't. I think we have ample evidence of that. Final story. I wrote an article for Californians for Population Stabilization. It should be up shortly. Immigration fraud enables criminals, terrorists, and war criminals to hide in plain sight. Think about that. And there's a story here, and here's the story. There were two people, an individual from Ethiopia, a name by the name of Elima Worku. This guy entered the United States 7 years ago, eventually became a citizen. Sounds like a great story. Here's a guy legally admitted into the United States. What he didn't tell anybody was that he was a war criminal. He had apparently been involved in the torture and killing of people in his native Ethiopia. And guess who he was living among? The people from Ethiopia living in the United States. That should be of great concern. They also said that he had a job as a driver. One of the things that worry me, and if you read the accounts of many of the terrorists operating in the United States, and no, I am not accusing this guy of being a terrorist. I don't know what he was doing here. But many terrorists like to drive because it gives them mobility and camouflage, the ability to move around in a vehicle that doesn't call attention to itself. In fact, if you look back at the shooting that I think I mentioned at the beginning of my program, this guy Cansey, who shot up the CIA, was a partner in a delivery service that used a delivery truck, and he would frequently drive by the CIA complex to figure out when the people get there and how they get in and where the traffic waits and all the other stuff. Basically, he was, as they would say in the old TV shows, casing the joint by using his truck. We've seen others involved with terrorism who drove an airport van or an ice cream truck up in Canada, a school bus driver. Wheels seem to be an inherent part. So here you have a war criminal who's a driver. According to allegations by the U.S. government, he was actually a war criminal, and we had naturalized him. And there was a terrific article in the Denver Post. They drew an analogy that immediately came to my mind. It reminded the reporter, and it reminds me, of the Nazi war criminals who committed atrocities during the Second World War and then came to America, you know, the boys from Brazil, and wound up hiding in plain sight very often for many, many years. thinking that they had escaped the long arm of the law, and unfortunately many of them did. Many of them lived out their full lives and died, never having been uncovered. Of course, there were some Nazi hunters out here, my heroes. I was happy to help them with one particular case. I was exuberant about helping them. But understand that we have war criminals living in the United States today, and we have no idea who they are. And in fact, let me read this brief quote from that article. For 7 years, Elena Wilco's new identity served perfectly for hiding in plain sight among young men who didn't know the horrors of political torture and killing back home, and the many other people who didn't want to know. But a federal jury's conviction of Elena Wilco this month for immigration fraud, stealing another man's identity, and concealing his bloody past to become a U.S. citizen has energized a hunt by Ethiopian Americans. They hope to expose hundreds more human rights violators they say are hiding in Denver and other U.S. cities. So they're here. Hundreds more. God knows what they're doing, who they're affiliated with. They're here. Unbelievable. The other story was about a woman by the name of Rasmia Yusuf Odess, 66 years of age, and I'm reading now, this is from the ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement press release. Had entered the United States as a lawful immigrant in 1995 and became a naturalized United States citizen in 2004. According to the news release, she had omitted the fact that she had been convicted in Israel in 1969 for her role in the bombing of a supermarket and the British consulate in Jerusalem, which killed two people. She'd been sentenced to life imprisonment for the crimes, but she was released 10 years later as the part of a prisoner exchange. Now think about that. Here's a woman who was convicted of killing people in a terrorist attack, and we naturalized her. And it took us 18 years to figure it out. Terrorists entering the country probably won't embed themselves for 18 years, but they might for 18 months as they go about their preparations. The ineptitude by the government to weed people out, to make certain that we don't let terrorists and criminals into our country, is mind-boggling. And yet, if you speak out against open borders, if you speak out against comprehensive reform, you get branded with all kinds of horrible labels. You're a xenophobe and a racist. Folks, this isn't about race. This isn't about ethnicity. This is simply about going back to the fundamental reason that we have immigration laws in the first place. And that reason, folks, is to make certain that we protect innocent lives and the jobs of American workers. And then we are told this foolishness that one of the things we should consider doing is to have aliens serve in the military if they're here illegally so that they can prove their loyalty. Forget about the Fort Hood shooter, right? But here's something that's on the page 68 of the 9/11 Commission report. You're going to love this one. As early as December 1993, a team of Al-Qaeda operatives had begun casing targets in Nairobi, Kenya for future attacks. It was led by Ali Mohammed. This, by the way, was, we're talking about the embassy bombing in Kenya back in 93. It was led by Ali Mohammed, a former Egyptian Army officer who had moved to the United States in the mid-1980s, enlisted in the U.S. Army, and became an instructor at Fort Bragg. We have a terrorist instructing our soldiers at Fort Bragg. What could possibly go wrong with that, boys and girls? To continue reading, he has provided guidance and training to extremists at the Farouk Mosque in Brooklyn, including some who were subsequently convicted in the February 93 attack of the World Trade Center. The casing team also included a computer expert whose write-ups were reviewed by Al-Qaeda's leaders. And here I believe we're talking about El-Bibi, the guy that was just brought back to the United States, or brought to the United States about 2 weeks ago. I mean, this is the kind of insanity that you look at and you say to yourself, are we the gang that couldn't shoot straight? What side is our own government on? Fox News was reporting today, I was watching Brett Baer, about what happened at the Libyan embassy, the U.S. embassy in Libya, Benghazi. And apparently, the guy that may have been leading the charge was somebody who had been at Guantanamo, and we let him out. This is the kind of ineptitude, the kind of massive screw-ups that undermines America's national security. And yet it continues day after day after day. you have Boehner saying that we have to take care of these aliens. Mr. Boehner, if you're listening to me, stop and think about what the 9/11 Commission warned us about. Stop and understand how this destroys the American dream for Americans. Stop and understand that there is no reasonable explanation or justification to have history repeat itself. My father used to say to me, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. We had an amnesty in 86. It led to the biggest influx of illegal aliens in the history of our country, including a couple of those individuals who attacked the World Trade Center in 1993, including a guy by the name of Mahmoud Abu Alima, who got agricultural amnesty, one of the key provisions that was written by none other than Chuck Schumer. In fact, I met with Schumer when he was my congressman and told him that this was a terrible idea. So here we have Mahmoud Abu Alima, alleged working at a bean farm in Florida, never did. The only thing this guy ever planted was a bomb in the garage of the World Trade Center in 1993 that killed six people and wounded 1,000. And by the way, comprehensive reform has another provision for agricultural workers all over again. And by the way, there are articles in India papers saying that they are outraged that the United States want Mexican farmers to come to the United States because they believe that their farmers would be willing to work here and do a much better job than Mexicans. And maybe they're right. Maybe we should have India and Mexico play off against each other for control of America's agricultural industries and maybe our high-tech industries too. I mean, why not? Because I'd be hard-pressed to come up with more than a handful of people in Congress who seem to care about the United States or Americans. This is about campaign contributions. This is about votes. But it's mostly about campaign contributions. And this administration, by far, is the worst administration that we've ever seen on so many issues. But let's put immigration at the top of the list. See, immigration isn't this minor issue. Let's just dispose of it and be done. If you cannot and will not secure your borders, if you have millions of people living in your country whose identities, backgrounds, and intentions and affiliations are unknown and unknowable, then you don't have national security. When a crime is committed, the police come in and the first thing they look at is, was it an inside job? Was it an inside job? Was it done by an employee? Very often, employees get a job at a fancy store because they have in mind to steal stuff, so they get a job, so they become familiar, and then they pull off a robbery. If we allow fraud to continue, if we take people who violated the process that's supposed to keep criminals out of the country, if you go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, Title 8, look it up. You know, anything I tell you is verifiable. These are the categories of aliens to be kept out of the United States. That's what the job of the inspector is. You know, when I helped the state of Arizona to defend themselves against the outrageous Department of Justice lawsuit because of their immigration law, SB 1070, I waxed a bit poetic in my declaration for the law firm. And I said for those 4 years that I was an inspector at Kennedy Airport, I had my eye to the peephole on America's front door. We were supposed to keep out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. We worked closely with public health. We were supposed to keep out people who suffered mental illness and were violent, the sex offenders, the criminals, the bank robbers, the drug dealers, the gang members, the money launderers. Okay? That's what we were supposed to keep out. We were supposed to keep out spies and terrorists, keep out the war criminals, keep out people who would do harm to us, people who would become public charges, and people who would take jobs Americans need. That's why we were there. That was my job. So when somebody sneaks in, there's a reason. And the reason is that they know that for one or more of those reasons on that list that I just gave you an abbreviated version of, they could not come through the front door. And now we're being told that people who could not come through the front door, who had something to hide, maybe a criminal background, maybe they were fugitives because they just killed a bunch of people. I mean, look at those two that just got citizenship under the other system, the so-called legal system, which has no integrity. So we have people here, fugitives, criminals, gang members, spies, terrorists, war criminals. What do you think we're going to do to screen them? We don't have the resources to even talk to them. They will simply mail in an application saying, my name is whoever. Final point you should know. When we naturalize an alien, they get to take any name they want. When they apply for a U.S. passport, the U.S. passport only reflects their new name. They get to put themselves in their own witness protection program. When I confronted Michael Chertoff at Chapman Law School several years ago, we both spoke at the law school, I confronted him about it, and he told me they were working on it. And I asked him, I said, Mr. Chertoff, what Manhattan Project, what quantum leap in technology are we breathlessly awaiting so that we could add a second name to a U.S. passport? We are not only endangering our own national security, ladies and gentlemen, we are endangering the security of our allies, because I know of a case of an individual who had been born in Lebanon, became a naturalized United States citizen, changed his name dramatically, and traveled freely for 4 years around the world, into Europe, into Latin America, around the Middle East, in a with a U.S. passport that simply reflected his new name. And this guy, according to a solid source, was a wanted international terrorist. God only knows why he visited those countries that he visited over a period of 8 years. We facilitated his entry into countries that, had they known his true name, probably would have kept him out and perhaps would have arrested him. This is the madness that we are witnessing today, and the band played on. The average American will watch the World Series and think, well, let somebody else be bothered. The average American will be watching Dancing with the Stars, let somebody else deal with it. The average American may go to see the movie Gravity and not understand the gravity of our situation. If I fired you up this evening, I think you could tell by my voice, I am certainly very fired up this evening. And by the way, I'm preparing for a trip to Minnesota in just about a week, very much looking forward to it, where I will be spending about a week out there doing some speaking engagements, trying to meet with some law enforcement folks and doing other things. If I sound fired up, I hope I've gotten you fired up. I always like to tell people that democracy is not a spectator sport. If you are concerned about your future, if, ladies and gentlemen, you are concerned about your children or your grandchildren's future, we're going down a very slippery slope. You know, you will not be able to put the toothpaste back in the tube if we are corrupt and stupid enough to enact any kind of a massive program that enables illegal aliens to get identity documents en masse. This isn't about being against immigrants. Quite the contrary, the most likely victims of the crimes perpetrated by transnational criminals are themselves the immigrants. The people that come here from those countries, just like this guy, this Ethiopian, have friends in their home country. And I can tell you that my years of experience have shown me something that's really horrible. And this is the point. If you have criminals operating in the United States and they are part of a transnational gang, they live among people of the same ethnicity, the same nationality, the same background, family members for most of those people are still back in the home country. And when one of these dirtbags, and it's not just from Mexico or Colombia or El Salvador, it could be from Russia, it could be from China, it could be from Japan, it could be from Jamaica, it could be from Israel. Doesn't matter. We're talking about criminals. They will go to some neighbor and say, did you see what happened in the backyard last night? Because they just shot somebody. And the guy says, well, yeah. And he says, okay, you go to the police. I know where your mother lives in Leningrad. I know where your father lives in Kingston, you see. And they tell these people, you go to the police, your family member is going to die. And they carry out that threat. This isn't an idle threat. And sometimes they will go to somebody and say, I have a package for you to deliver to a friend wherever, in Detroit, in Chicago, in California. Here's a suitcase. Get on an airplane with it. Take it to him. Well, what's in it? What? No. You don't ask questions. You take it. And if you don't take it, by the way, we will visit your sister tomorrow. We will visit your mother tomorrow. They now have a courier. And because this guy has now committed a crime, he's now fearful that he's in trouble. And how did this all begin? Because the bad guys are here, and the bad guys are putting pressure and threatening violence and carrying out violence, not just in the United States, but back in their home country against decent immigrants who came to America trying to flee from the violence and the corruption of their native countries. probably the saddest thing I ever heard, and I've heard this by a few people. I was going in to see Neil Cavuto to do an interview with him not long ago. The driver of the car was a gentleman who came here from China perhaps 15 years ago. And he was telling me how his children were born here, and they were getting ready to go on to college and so forth. He was all excited about being American. But he said, you know something? If America was 15 or 20 years ago, I forgot exactly how long this guy's been here, but he said, if America was then what it is today, I would not have come. I had one woman, we have to go to the emergency room. She works at the sonogram machine here in New York, Sonograph, and she said to me that when she left China, China was a communist country and America was this land of opportunity and hope. And she said, over the past 10 years, America is swapping places with China. How do you even begin to answer these questions? We are willfully destroying the middle class. Now, there are members of Congress who I know oppose this, and they're fighting hard, and they need your support. But we've got to be clear about supporting those people who represent us, those few that have the guts to do it, and we have to be willing to serve notice on those who are against us and let them know that we will do whatever it takes to support any candidate who will run against them. Don't just tell them, I'm not going to vote for you, because that's silly. They don't care. They don't care. But if you go to a member of Congress who's up for re-election and say, I don't care if Donald Duck runs against you, I will go door to door and spend every waking hour collecting dimes, nickels, and quarters just to fund anybody who will oppose you in the next election. That's the message. This isn't about being a Democrat or being a Republican, folks. It's about being an American. It is not anti-immigrant to be pro-American, because America is not, a homogeneous, vanilla country. We are the most ethnically diverse country on the planet. Americans come in every flavor. This isn't about one color or one race. And when people tell you that, you know that they are morally bankrupt. They have no other argument. That's like they think the nuclear bomb. I'm going to accuse you of being a racist. It doesn't work. It's America's minorities, folks, who are suffering the worst. As bad as unemployment is for white America, it's much worse for black and Latino America. If you look at the crime in those tough immigrant neighborhoods, it's far higher than it is in the white neighborhoods. When people talk about being a bigot, if you want the immigration laws enforced, I am telling you that there's weakness in that argument, because they know that the facts are not on their side. The facts, the law, common sense, and decency are on the side of enforcing our laws, having an immigration system that welcomes, cooperates those who legally immigrate into America, but the system needs to have integrity to keep out the terrorists, to keep out the war criminals, to keep out the people who would have an adverse impact on American families and American workers. That's why we have immigration laws. That's why you have a peephole on your front door to be careful about letting that stranger into your home, to make certain that you don't unwittingly permit somebody in who would do harm to you. That's all that we're talking about. Don't read into it. It's a very simple requirement not to admit those who would create a problem. I can't imagine any reasonable person arguing against it. With poverty up, with unemployment up, with underemployment up, the time has come for this country to come to understand that charity must begin at home. I think it's American Express or some credit card company that has a wonderful slogan, membership has its rewards. Don't you think citizenship should have its rewards? Please go to my two websites that I've asked you to check out. Go to capsweb.org. Wonderful folks out in Santa Barbara. Please go to michaelcutler.net. Make certain that you get involved in the political process. By the way, if you like the articles that you see on either of the websites, I have a favor. Please pass them along to your friends and neighbors. Ask them to do the same. I'm trying to create a bucket brigade of truth. It's becoming ever more difficult to get the message out. In years past, I did sometimes more than a dozen TV interviews in a month. TV doesn't want to talk about these issues. They don't want to talk about the issues, and it's something that we really need to have an honest discussion about, because immigration isn't a single issue, but a singular issue. So as I say, educate yourself, and then make sure that what you learn enables you to have a meaningful conversation with those people who were paid to represent you. Democracy is not a spectator sport, folks. Have a wonderful weekend. Don't forget to change your clock. I think it's on this Saturday. We have to fall back, as they say. And we'll see you next week at the same time right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. Good night, everybody.